The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Friday, the 13th of November, 2020. On the podcast today, Andrew Duxbury, Finance Director of Galliford Try, provides an upbeat trading statement that shows their cash position is towards the upper end of previous guidance. Also on the podcast, Paul Hill, full-time investor and equity analyst, talks about five stocks to follow, which are Oncommune, Galliford Try, Equals, Taylor Wimpey, and On The Market. By the way, Galliford Try is up very strongly today on that statement. Also, Russ Mould, investment director at stockbroker AJ Bell, talks about growth versus value. And at the end of the podcast, as always, I'll have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs. By the way, you can see top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll all see lots of the content. In fact, you'll see that interview Paul Hill did with Dr. Adam Hill, no relation according to Paul, from Oncommune. There's also one there in Alien Metals, plus a COVID-19 index. What's the biggest rise of the day? It is Synergin, up 30% to 131. Biggest fall of the day is Modern Water, down 10% to 2.2. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Andrew Duxbury, Finance Director at Galliford Try. GFRD is the ticker there. Andrew, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thank you. It's great to talk to you again.
Yeah, well, you just announced a trading update, so that was alongside your AGM, and we'll talk through some of the highlights of that update in a bit. Before we do, for people not familiar, I know you've changed or refocused the business recently, so can you just explain what the business is about, Galliford Try, please, Andrew?
Yeah, of course. Well, Galliford Try is a UK construction company, having sold our house building businesses in January this year. And we're a well-capitalised company. We've got cash on the balance sheet, no debt, no pension scheme liabilities. And Justin, construction is fundamental to the UK economy and to its post-COVID economic recovery. And we operate nationally through our building and infrastructure divisions. So in building, our order book covers education, defence, health, commercial sectors, and is really focused on improving the UK built environment. Mm-hmm. And in infrastructure, our clients are primarily the public and regulated sectors, and we split infrastructure between highways and environment being mainly water and wastewater. And I guess finally, our management team, very experienced and is really committed to creating long-term value for our stakeholders.
Absolutely. Okay, so you just said the AGM, you've released a trading update alongside that. Give us some of the highlights, if you could, Andrew, of that.
Sure. Well, we're 4 months into the financial year and trading has been very good. So all of our sites are open. Our projects are fully operational and productivity is at normal levels, despite COVID and the second national lockdown that we're in. We've got excellent average month-end cash. In the first half year, the cash is towards the upper end of our previously guided range, which was 125 to 145 million pounds. And we expect to return to profitability in the first half of this current financial year and to resume our dividend with the interim results. We're really encouraged by the order pipeline and by some excellent recent strategic contract wins. And all of that comes together means that we're making really good progress against our strategy.
Excellent stuff. Tell us about the strategy, if you could. Give us a bit of insight into that.
Sure. Well, our strategy is really focused on robust risk management, sustainable growth, and that sustainability agenda is really important to us. It's about careful cash management and it's about margin progression. So as part of that risk management, we operate with carefully selected sectors, which is largely through frameworks and with repeat clients. I mentioned earlier, we're well capitalized. We've got no debt, no pension liability. We've got a portfolio of high quality PPP assets. And we've got a really strong order book, which is in our chosen markets and has got the right risk profile for us going forwards. So as I've said, we're making good progress on these strategic priorities, but just as importantly, also making really good progress against the financial targets for the business that we set out in September of this year, which are, as I said, focusing on bottom line, margin improvement.
Yeah, absolutely. And before we go, I ask you for three reasons why someone should add you to their watch list. I mean, in the week, of course, there's very positive news on the vaccine, and that must give a bit of a boost, because so many sectors have been hammered down due to COVID and not trading at the true value. I mean, I think, you know, we are seeing some light at the end of the tunnel. That's got to have a positive effect on the company and your operations, hasn't it, Andrew?
Yeah, absolutely. As I said, we stayed operating throughout the COVID pandemic. All of our sites are open, which is great, but we can't look past, you know, COVID, you know, is a big disruptor for our clients, you know, for many of our suppliers as well. So the vaccine coming through, when that comes through, that will be, you know, a real benefit to us, you know, as it is to the whole economy.
Yeah, yeah. And well, I think there's lots of news coming out on vaccines over the next few weeks. So yeah, hopefully more good news for you guys and your clients. Okay, Andrew, every day in the podcast, I highlight the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. So to get on that list, of course, people have to hit that follow button on your page. So give us three reasons why someone should hit that follow button and add Galliford Try to their watch list, please.
Yeah, of course. Well, look, firstly, it's our strong platform that we've got for sustainable, profitable growth. So we've got the right strategy, we're well capitalized, got great client relationships, great framework positions. And Justin, we're seeing the fruits of this already in our current trading performance. We'll be profitable this year. We'll be reinstating dividends this year. And we've got a really strong cash performance this year. So secondly, it's that focus on risk management, which gives us the confidence for the future. Our focus on sectors which have got real growth potential, where we've got core proven strengths and a real disciplined approach to project selection. And thirdly, again, this is about the outlook. We've got a really high visibility of our future revenue streams, including the positive impact of the increased government investment in construction as part of the government's economic recovery plan. So three really strong reasons why your listeners should follow us.
Excellent stuff. Andrew, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Thanks very much indeed, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
Welcome to Stocks to Follow. This is on the podcast and the video. Don't forget, if you're watching on YouTube, hit that subscribe button and notification bell if you want to straight to your inbox. Paul Hill's with me, equity analyst, full-time investor. You're right, fella.
Yeah, it's Friday the 13th, though, so watch out for anything happening, like black cats.
Not only that, tech issues. We've had an hour and a half of tech issues. So that's taken us down. I'm assuming it's Friday the 13th. I think it's Zoom, to be honest. It conflicts with my system, but there we are. We're here. There we are. Let's start off then. Let's start off on a macro level. Big, massive news out this week on Pfizer and the vaccine, wasn't it? You know?
Absolutely brilliant. Yeah. I mean, it was a totally blockbuster. It was. I thought the sort of the efficacy rates of vaccines, we were both quite positive when they were coming through, were going to be roughly around about 50%. And I remember having a good chat to you in terms of I didn't think if 50% effective, it would actually give us herd immunity, because we were still going to have everybody inoculated every 3 or 4 months. But 90% is a game changer. And that's what the market actually responded to. And you saw that through the sentiment, your fear gauge, because it went from 22 last Friday. And I think it's over double that. It's over 50 now. And yeah, we had a sort of like a bipolar response on the markets. All the banged up sort of like, you know, trodden down sort of COVID stocks from before. So your banks, your airlines, your cruise liners, all that kind of stuff soared. And then equally on the other side of the gauge, you had some of your big techs coming down. But I mean, I think you pointed out to me, your COVID testing stocks got a real hammering.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, Pfizer's the first to announce. So we've got Moderna coming out, same kind of technology. There is a distribution, you know, there's a logistics of distributing minus 80 degrees it has to be at. It's a hurdle, but it can be done. But I think the big game changer, but when we get Moderna, you know, figures out, I think it'll happen again. We'll see these beaten down stocks because we see the economy, you know, getting to open back up in 6 months' time, maybe. So that's what we're seeing. I think it's a tide change. I really do. But I think the game changer after Moderna will be AstraZeneca, because their vaccines can be stored at normal temperatures, pretty much 2 to 8 degrees. And we bought, and the government's bought 100 million doses of that. And that's going to be, you know, dates on that coming out probably end of November, in December. But like I said, we'll have Moderna next. Again, I see a spike up in the stocks, beaten down, and then maybe settle down a bit. Then AstraZeneca, that's the game changer, I think, because that's where, you know, like I said, that's going to re-change it for us all. But right now, I'm going to do a video on the weekend called Should You Buy the Dip? And I said, you should buy the dip if basically, you know, it's in an uptrend. Now, I see now all these like hospitality, leisure, banks, all that, they will start being an uptrend now. I think they'll be outperform anything else in the next 6 months, those stocks. And I think anything to do with COVID, that's relied on COVID, will pretty much take a dive every time we have vaccine news coming out. And so if you're holding those stocks, you know, put your tin hats on, I think, you know, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think one thing which is quite interesting, which I haven't heard talked about, is that 90% is so blockbusterly good. It's actually put a pretty high bar for all the other vaccines. Because if you were a government, let's just put it into perspective, and you were buying 100 million doses, yeah, would you want another vaccine that was only 50% effective and you're going to have to basically inoculate people three or four times a year? Or would you actually go for one with 90%? And the answer to that is you're gonna go with one, aren't you?
Well, the economics may prove to be, first of all, like I said, distribution is going to be hard. You have to set up a cold, you know, supply chain with Pfizer and Moderna's vaccines. Plus, they cost 30 quid a shot. AstraZeneca's, £2 a shot. So, the government spent over $1 billion on 40 million doses of Pfizer's, and they'll spend 200 million on 100 doses, 100 million doses of AstraZeneca. So the cost is phenomenal. It's 10 times, Pfizer's is 10 times the cost of AstraZeneca's, pretty much. If it comes down to cost. And also, in developing worlds, you're going to have a problem with Pfizer and Moderna's because they have to be at minus 80, whereas AstraZeneca is fine. You know, it can be distributed around the world. So okay,
let's just take a step back. Okay, if you were a government, and you were given the choice of getting herd immunity or not herd immunity. it's an easy one because
we don't know what the rate of AstraZeneca is yet.
Exactly. What I've said is 90% efficacy is quite a high bar.
For the rest to come onto,
which is great. Let's be clear about it. It's absolutely. We're both totally agree that the beaten down stocks have now got effectively a floor underneath them and should come back well. I mean, your one, is it a stay put? Should do well.
I think load up on the banks, load up on travel stocks, all the good companies, load up on them. Because I think, honestly, the stock market looks 12 months down the line and it's seeing an open economy in 12 months' time, fully opened and reopened, as long as we get, we get some more positive data from these vaccines, which I think we will. Like Moderna is the same tech as Pfizer, you know? And then AstraZeneca, there have been good reports coming out about that as well. There's been one sort of health safety issue, but the person that had the problem had an underlying health and safety issue. But I mean, I just genuinely think 12 months will almost be, well, the market, I think the market will rally strongly over the next 6 months for those sectors. Of course, the economy won't get back to normal by this time next year. But of course, the market looks ahead, doesn't it? So.
I think the next 3 months might be a bit rocky because you're going to get sort of like negative GDP prints with the lockdowns in the UK. But I'm with you. As long as you have a longer time horizon and 12 months, you'll see some very good returns on those stocks that are still in fair market.
Yeah, GDP, though, looks behind, isn't it? So people are assuming we know what's happened behind. It's just, can we get back to normal? I think that hope after this year's lockdown will be good. Anyway, let's look at stocks to follow. What you got there, Paul? Start off. What you got?
I actually spoke to just yesterday, and the video is now on, so I'd certainly recommend investors have a look at it. I spoke to a guy called Dr. Adam Hill. He isn't any of my relatives at all, but he's the CEO of Onkymune, and he was talking through the actual business itself. And this is, you talked about the vaccine, it was a massive breakthrough. Well, there's another breakthrough which has happened over the last few years in medical science, and that is using your immune system to basically diagnose patients early of certain conditions, but also on personalized medicine. And now, investors have probably heard about the term personalized medicine, getting treatment specifically to people, etc. Now, when it comes to sort of like diagnosing people, you know, it's, when you've got cancer or you've got other conditions, sometimes you only find the symptoms and it's far too late. You've got stage 3 cancer, for instance. Now, if you actually use your immune system, firstly, to use it as a biomarker, what I mean by a biomarker is basically like an early warning system that this patient has already got cancer, then you can bring forward that diagnosis, bring it forward by 4 years. And what that means, using their immunodiagnostic technology, is that the treatment cost and the patient's outcomes, the actual beneficiary, is just massively better. So instead of actually having a sort of like having to spend $300,000 on a discreet drug, etc. You've treated them very early, and he's had a much better quality life. So this is why it's a huge immuno anything is a bit like the internet back in 2000, and like this vaccine. It's a massive game changer for the medical world, because it allows personalized medicine and it allows the early diagnosis of multiple conditions, whether it's oncology, which is cancer, or autoimmune or infectious diseases like COVID. And what you're using, the single most important thing the investors should go away is, what you're using is your immune system to identify that individual, whether he has a particular condition, about, you know, multiple years earlier. Now, just to give you numbers, this is a really, really hot area, not surprising for investors, because it really is breakthrough science. Now, in oncology alone, one of the biggest players is Illumina, and it basically bought a company called Grail a couple of months ago for $8 billion. It sizes the oncology immuno sector, the next generation diagnosis, at $75 billion. And that just is one therapeutic area. So the reason why I alert investors to this is that this company has built a database of immunodiagnostic science that is just leading edge. And therefore, you can then use it to develop products. And it's got one of its own, which is a lead early warning system for lung cancer. But it's really using that to showcase its technology. And it's going to then sell the data and the information it gets from its platform, its immunodiagnostic sort of like, you know, information bank, to other, whether it's to drug discovery companies, whether it's to other test developers going forward. And they could, I mean, they're worth about £110 million at the moment at a share price of about 180. I could easily see them getting to well over $1 billion. In 10 years' time. That would not be a stretch. But given their competitors have just been bought for $2 billion and for $8 billion, and if you just worked out what the platform was worth and just used a sort of like a modest peer group multiple of a multiple of four of their R&D spend, you get to a fair value for the ship, just for the platform, regardless of the test they have, of over £4.30 compared to £180. So the point here, yeah, the big picture is that they have got one of the only immunodiagnostic data stores in the world that likes of Roche, Genentech, Novartis are actually going to be able to leverage to develop their diagnostics and to develop their drugs going forward. So they're in a brilliant position, and even better, this thing is proving itself, enhancing as it goes on, because when they do tests and take samples like biopsies from their clients, they then store that information. It adds to the database, it makes it bigger, it makes it deeper, and it gives them more beneficial data with AI on top for their clients and for the medical world. It's like one of those things, it just gets better and better, and somebody else is paying for it. So yeah. Yeah, I would strongly recommend. I know you're chatting to Adam at some time going forward.
Yeah, I checked him a while back actually. I was very impressed with the system, but it's one of the things I couldn't quite get my head around it.
Have I explained it to you?
You've been part of the family. Being part of the family there, you should know a lot about it. You know, because him being your brother, you should say, because it's a couple of shares. But ONC is ticking there, isn't it? So put that in your watch list, and it's been followed actually on thing. Do you know what? I want a quick mention. I'm not going to get too much detail because they're on the podcast today. But Galliford Try, they've refocused the business in construction. They're going to be profitable next year. And literally, their market cap at the moment is below the net asset value. But like I said, they are doing well. They're sorting to refocus it because they sold off the home building part of it. But even with lockdown, they've been doing very well. And you should check out, they did a statement, AGM statement out today, and their cash levels are at the top end of where their guidance was, always like that. And like I said, profitability next year. And literally, you can see they've been hammered the share price, but they're now flatlining. But today, one of the biggest rises, I think people are starting to see that they're making progress here. Like I said, with profits coming next year and a big cash pile there, no debt, then I think people are understanding it a bit more. But Galliford Try, worth looking at. Definitely.
Well, just on that, my father made a shed load of money out of Galliford Try a few years back. So he's a real big fan. And you're right. As long as with good management team, it's a beaten down stock. If you look at a 3 to 5 year period, then you can do really well out of that.
Yeah, well, just in construction now, they've got some big chunky contracts. I mean, worth looking at over their news of late, because it's worth... chart-wise, ideal, it's starting to flatline, starting to pick up a little bit, but it seems that the bottom has been touched and we're bouncing off that now. So have a look at it. Go on, what's the next one from you, Paul?
Well, you and I both own it, Rosslyn Data Systems.
Yeah.
Data technology. I mean, they announced that they just won a large 3-year contract with a UK grocer and a general merchant. Now, I don't know who that is, but that was sort of like... It was UK and Ireland based, so it's either Tesco's or M&S or somebody of that ilk. What effectively they've sold them is a point software solution that allows them to do all of the Brexit documentation, so the customs, calculating tariffs, collecting import-export duties, all seamlessly and automated. The other advantage of it is that it allows you effectively a bridgehead into the account to give you, to land and expand and to sell up the big data and the AI technology, plus any future cost saving software. So this is it's taken the shares up by about a pence, 1p this week from about 5.25p to about 6.25p. But it's just really a statement of intent. I still think they're very cheap. They're only trading on about 2x sales compared to the sector on about 5. And, the pipeline is good. So it's a matter of sort of converting that. And, all I'd say is it's a great customer to have. I have a fair value of 10p. The shares are at 6.25. I've got a lot of shares. There's no reason for me... I'm just going to carry on holding because I think they're going to do a great job.
Well, sometimes obviously they can't say how much the contracts are worth, but I always get slightly annoyed when you see a contract with a big person like that and you can't have any idea how much it's worth. Any idea? What's your thoughts on that or not?
Well, I don't think it's material, as in to move the dial. But the point is, it's another blue chip customer who's using and direction of travel. They aren't going to be the only company who needs Brexit custom software. I mean, anybody in the UK is going to want to automate it. And because of COVID, there's been other priorities. So you can see that part of the business doing really well. The big data side from other channel checks from D4T4 is doing well. So I think that's obviously the cost reduction platform they have on the supply chain. Again, that should be doing well also. So I'm sure their pipeline is very ripe for plucking and to convert into hard orders going forward. There's been a bit of an air pocket over the last 6 months, as there has been across the whole B2B enterprise space because of COVID. But that's not lost. It's just deferred. The pent-up demand, I think they're going to have a really good 2021, 2022, like most of the other software stocks we talk about, because corporates haven't yet spent but still need to. They're in a perfect space. Software saves company... time, resource, and cost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, RDT, that's the third one to follow there. Do some research. Any others?
Yeah, well, another one I own, I own quite a few shares, is Equals Group, which is basically the old FairFX, and they had a landmark contract with HomeSend this week, which is majority owned, I believe, by MasterCard. So this is a real blue chip customer. And they're using Equals' bank grade software and straight through processing technology to do their UK bank transactions from their clients all the way around the world. Now, this is what they call a B2B2B deal. So effectively, they're selling it into HomeSend, and also effectively they're using it as their platform to do their back end. And that just shows you how one, good the technology is, and two, if some of the biggest hitters of the operators in the world decide to standardize on Equals's platform, then they're still trading a ridiculously low valuation on what's the 1.4x sales compared to the market for fintech sort of payments. They're about 4, 5, 6x. So again, I just think there's a lot of upside there. I mean, it's a first of hopefully a lot of deals onto this B2B2B side. But, it's another flagship contract.
EQLS. Yeah, jumped up this week, didn't it? From a couple of pence up there. It's nice.
It's had a couple of niggly sellers in the background who have just dumped stock onto the market. But once it's reached the base, and again, it should be a big beneficiary next year through pent up demand, because, you know, as their customers start spending more and traveling more, and you have corporate, you know, because they've been hit as people haven't been able to go on foreign holidays, and also because, you know, business people haven't been able to stay in hotels and travel. But that'll all come, a lot of that will come back next year. And their B2B customers, their corporate clients, will, you know, are growing in terms of using more and more, you know, digital payments.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's going to be, you know, 2021 I'm quite bullish on, yeah.
I've been saying that for the last two or three weeks. You know, I've had a rubbish 2020 and I've written it off, even though it's had a good bounce this week. And I'm just going to put it down as one of those years that you just want to forget. But I'm really bullish on 2021 because most of my stocks, I mean, I haven't got to buy anymore. My portfolio is almost perfectly placed to benefit. So it might not happen, but, you know, I'm very, very comfortable. And another one is, which came out on Monday, and we've been talking about these for some time, but UK house builders, Taylor Wimpey. You know, I own quite a few shares in them, particularly because they build houses. 90% of their portfolio is house building rather than flats, etc. So you've got that sort of like balance, that move and shift towards people wanting a bigger property for home working and also a garden. And they came out, surprise, surprise, with they're selling more properties at higher prices than they'd previously expected. So they had a big trading update Monday that they upgrade. They said they were gonna hit the top end of their analyst expectations for this year, and then they were going to be well above the top end of consensus for 2021. And so the shares have rallied from about 110 to about 145, I think. But even on my modest expectations for next year, they're still only on 1.3 times book, and that's less than the peers, about 1.4, 1.5. PE ratio is less than 11 times for next year, and they're going to pay a dividend, and they've got 500 million of cash on the balance sheet. I mean, I just don't think there's much downside, unless you believe the housing market's going to have a real problem next year, which I don't now, because we've got the, you know, the vaccine breakthrough. Then these guys should do well. You're never going to 10 times your money on it. But hey, you know, there's some. You've got to have a I like a portfolio where you've got some good multiple opportunities, i.e., such stocks like Equals, Alico's, Alicosoft, and Rosslyn, which can 2, 3, 4 times your investment. But equally, I like some stocks that can sort of go up 50%, even 100% over 5 years, because, you know, they're big cap, they're more solid, more stable, and Taylor Wimpey, in my view, falls into that cap.
Yeah, well, you say that they're more solid, more stable, but I've seen some pretty volatile times amongst the big stocks. But having said that, you know, I think Taylor Wimpey and all that, they're stamp duty freeze, isn't it, until next March, is that right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, but it'll be extended. I mean, there's no way the chance is going to...
If it's not extended, I can't see the market drop off a cliff. I think, if anything, people will try and rush and try and get it, you know, something done. Yes. It won't drop off a cliff afterwards, because it'll just go back to normal if that's the case. But it may be extended, yeah. But they've got to get some money in the coffers that the bank are there, or the government. They are in debt a little bit.
They will, but not so soon. They're just going to... Yeah. I mean, if you're not going to push us into a recession. The housing market is just too important for the UK economy to take your foot off the pedal at the moment. That's that construction, which is your Galliford Try, and the UK housing market employs so many people, not only directly but more so indirectly. And so that I just can't. I mean, and also the repair and maintenance industry and stuff off the back of it. It's just absolutely crucial. He's an astute guy, the Chancellor, and he realises that there's a few sectors which are strategic to the UK economy. And housing market has a huge wealth effect, because if your house is going down, you feel as though you're losing money, and therefore you pull back your horns. If it's going up, you then think, okay, I'm actually going to spend a few, because my house has gone up by a few thousand pounds. There's no way he's going to risk a second recession on the back of taking the housing market down. I just can't see it. It'd be stupid.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? That's why, I mean, for housing or that area, that's why I'm investing on the market, you know, on themarket.com. I just think it's ridiculous, the comparison now. I mean, if you look at the amount of agencies they have committed Rightmove. Rightmove is 90 times the valuation, 90 times the valuation of on the market. They have about close to 20,000 agencies on their books, Rightmove. On the market, got over 14,000 now. All right, their website traffic is going up. They charge a third of Rightmove. They're 65% owned by estate agents, and they get. I've got two filters exactly set up for Rightmove on the app and on the market, and they're now getting. I'm getting pretty much a similar amount of inquiry, probably sending me on a weekly basis. And I'm thinking that shows stock levels on the market is very good. And so I'm just thinking, there's no way, you know, there's no way they're worth 90 times less than Rightmove at the moment. And after a while, of course, they've got quite a few agencies on reduced rates or free rates, but they're converting those people. And when they can show them, you know, that their leads is very good and is worth a lot of money to them, most agencies, I think, will have, you know, two portals, you know, on the market. But then, of course, their loyalty, agency's loyalty, is going to be towards on the market because they'll have shares in on the market and they offer up these new and exclusives, often 24 hours ahead of Rightmove. And I get them, I see them, that wow. And then on the market, and then Rightmove send me an email about 24 hours afterwards with the same property. And I'm thinking, wow, there's such a big gap between, you know, the valuation of Rightmove and the valuation on the market. It's ridiculous. And like I said, first time they made a profit. Last year, so it's, I think it's looking good. The metrics are stacking up. Everything's in the right direction. Agencies signing up for them, and website traffic. Everything is going in the right direction from the market. You know?
Yeah, I think you've chosen well there. I mean, we've chatted about sort of on the market a few times, and the reason why I didn't, I like the management team. I love the business opportunity. Is that I have exposure to the housing market through Alico and AlicoSoft, and likewise with Taylor Wimpey, and also with Lloyds. And Lloyds has got, you know, the biggest mortgage book in the... So I have enough housing market exposure, but I think you're right. I mean, it's got a one-way... It's going to... Once you reach a critical mass, which is already done, it almost becomes... The brand becomes self-fulfilling because you haven't got to advertise, because it just becomes people like you start being the ambassador because you're customers and you're getting a great service. You start saying to your neighbour, actually, I'm getting this and this and this. And so, you know, just virally... They get lots more customers, and they haven't even got to advertise. I mean, you had that with Aldi back in like 15 years ago when it sort of increased market share, because people used to sort of think, actually, that's the best thing to go to. So you're going to get it with on the market.
Yeah, and then, you know, and literally, the more people sign up to you, of course, as a user, the more email shots you send out. So, of course, it generates a lot more website traffic. So, yeah, it just builds. It's just a flywheel effect, isn't it? Anything else?
No, I think that's probably it, really. I mean, as I say, there's been a good bounce. I'm pretty positive about the actual, you know, the year end, and I think next year is going to be excellent.
Cool. There we are. Five stocks to follow there. And don't forget, if you want this video to your inbox, then hit that subscribe button and notification bell. Paul, speak next week.
Yeah, thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at Stockbroker AJ Bell. You're up, Russ.
I'm in good health and I'm in good form, I'm pleased to say, Justin, even though we currently have no kitchen during English lockdown 2, which is a masterpiece of bad timing.
Yeah, well, how are you doing? How are you dealing with it? I suppose, all these Uber Eats takeaways and all these kind of Just Eat?
We're determined not to go down that path, on the grounds I'll be like a house end at the end of the 5 or 6 week period. So we've actually got a little 2-ring hot plate. And I'm eating an awful lot of soup, ping-ping, at the moment. The plan was to eat in our lovely local pub once or twice a week, which may not have been good for the girth, but good for the soul. Yeah. But again, we can't do that at the moment. So we've got a rule of one takeaway a week, and then there's a lot of soup and a little bit of ping. But actually, we're not doing too bad with pasta, omelettes. We actually managed to cook some fish on a hot plate the other day, so it's not ideal, and the house is a bit dusty and a bit smelly, but the builders are doing a fantastic job, and they're doing their bit for Travis Perkins and Ferguson and Grafton and all the builders merchant stocks that you can think of. So.
Do you know what? Right there, you've summarised that, on the economy right now. Building can happen, but you can't go to pubs, and that's the way it is, isn't it? So that's you can see why that happens, but do you know what? Of the rivals, talking at the business level, Uber Eats versus Just Eat. Now, I've got both apps. I very, very rarely, probably like you, once a week, if that, takeaway. But Uber Eats are a lot more aggressive in the marketing. And they're very clever. Every Thursday or start of the week, they give you a 10% off. A little notification pops up, and I don't get that from Just Eat. So they're trying to grab market share as well. But I mean, it's working because we sort of take advantage of that 10% off sometimes. And so I never use Just Eat anymore. And in fact, I've hardly used it anyway. But anyway, what are we chatting about today, Russ?
Well, I just thought we'd talk a little bit about growth versus value. And I know they're not labels everybody likes, I hasten to add. So we can come back to whether they're actually relevant or not as well. But just, we obviously had the vaccine announcement from Pfizer with that late phase three trial on Monday. And everybody said, oh, look, you've seen a big move out of tech and growth into cyclical / value.
Yeah, rotation of the
assess whether growth and value are the right terms or not. But also, believe it or not, value started outperforming in July.
Oh, did it?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And all right, there are lots of ways in which you can slice it, but this is one way which an American colleague, a former American colleague, I should say, who now runs his own money, said something that he was looking. I mean, a lot of us are familiar with the QQQ, the Invesco QQQ Trust in the US. It's used as a bit of a proxy for growth stocks. It basically follows as a basket through a tracker fund the biggest 100 stocks in the NASDAQ that are not financials.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So it's the QQQ. It's huge. It's hundreds of billions of dollars of assets under administration. Yeah. And what he does, and he's tipped me onto it, and I've written a piece about for our customers about it, and he looks at that relative to the IWN ETF in America, which is the Russell 2000 value ETF. So it's not just small caps,
yeah,
but it's value small cap, or factor value. So you've got big cap growth, NASDAQ 100 biggest, again, relative to the Russell 2000 value. And yeah, surprise, surprise, over the last 10 years, the QQQ was absolutely run over the IWN. And since the FANG index was launched in 2014, that performance has become even more pronounced. But if you divide the price of the QQQ by the price of the IWN, you know, if the line goes up, then the QQQ is doing better. The line goes down, the IWN is doing better. And since the middle of July, the IWN has been outperforming, and that has become more pronounced this month and certainly in the last week. Now, the question is, will this last? Because we've seen head fakes before where tech has sort of stumbled a little bit and slash value has come through. Now, Warren Buffett, by the way, hates the phrase growth and he hates the phrase value because he says all investing is about growth.
What he
says is, you know, growth is probably slightly more self-evident. It's tech, it's secular growth, it's companies that can do well, probably fare broadly irrespective of the economic environment. Value, I think people would describe it as undervalued growth or growth that isn't immediately apparent right now. So, which we would view right now as cyclical growth, because let's face it, there hasn't been an awful lot of economic growth around for the last 10 years. It's been pretty sluggish, and we've had a very, very deep and nasty recession this year from which we're struggling to emerge even now. But then, if we do get any economic pickup, the growth that you will get bombed out cyclicals from losing money to making a profit, they will grow much more quickly than any growth stock you can think of. So that's why you may have seen that transition. I think it's as simple as that. Is the market now thinking vaccine plus fiscal stimulus plus monetary stimulus plus / quasi return to normal at some stage means that all of those stocks that have just been hammered in terms of operational financial performance and share price, airlines, aerospace stocks, hotels, leisure stocks, pubs, if they do get, you know, it won't take a big upturn in business from big losses to become small losses and small losses to become profits.
That's exactly what, yes.
And that's it. It's just pace of recovery. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but do you know what? I'm looking at a tweet I sent out on September 26th. I took on the whole weekend podcast with a couple of mates I do it with who invest as well. And I said, listen, because Pfizer was guiding towards October for their first bit of news, but then apparently it became political and they delayed it a bit longer. I don't know. But anyway,
suggestion they left it till after the
Yeah. So I did tweet on the 26th of September. I said, when a vaccine is announced in October, hot COVID stocks will bomb, and bombed out travel, leisure, and hospitality stocks will boom.
I think,
I'm a month out, because Pfizer's a month out. But this Pfizer's just the first. Moderna's next, the same kind of tech. And the distribution, distribution isn't that good on these things, because minus 80. But AstraZeneca, now that's going to come up for the end of the year. That doesn't need to be refrigerated. And we've bought a lot more stocks. But I think generally that will bring the economy, this light at the end of the tunnel. These sectors that are bombed out, of course, like you said, they don't need a lot to recover, because some of them, like I said, the pub's not taking any revenue in, so they start recovering. And so you saw that, I'm calling it Pfizer Vaccine Day on Monday. If you look at the stocks that really rocketed on that day, it'll be more of that when more news on vaccines come out, like, you know, you've got EasyJets and TUIs and all these carnival cruises, anything to do with leisure travel, they all sort of rallied. That, to me, is a tide, changing tide right there. It'll happen again and again, the more
that's
news
That's my
get.
Suspicion, and I think there's a temptation to think, oh, certain stocks are up 30, 40, 50, 60%, but that's only after one announcement. There are going to be more vaccine announcements, and I think that's the issue. Yeah, okay, there are clear obstacles. Yeah. It was a small trial that gave a 90% result. The thing's got to be frozen. It's got to be distributed. You know, there are 7 billion people in the world. You know, there are things still to be overcome. But it's the rate of change in a rate of change. It's the second derivative. And once things stop getting worse and start getting better, then you will see different shares performing and stock markets performing in a different way. Plus, you've still got huge amounts of fiscal support, huge amounts of monetary support, and I don't think they're going to be going away.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, and I was listening to a very intriguing webinar yesterday where one of the speakers pointed out that American disposable income was up 7.7% year on year last month.
Wow.
Now, at the moment, they're not able to necessarily get out and spend that to their full capacity because they're either, you know, they're either poorly, you know, fingers crossed they're better, or there's a local lockdown, or they're spending some of it online, but... So what happens when those people are back out and about and they're back healthy and confidence is up and there's still a Democrat stimulus bill coming through? You know, you would think at some stage there is going to be quite a lot of pent-up consumer activity, and it's the same in the UK. Those people who have been lucky enough to keep their jobs, and thankfully it's still the majority, then you know they're not going to be commuting. They're going to be better, a little bit better off. We have some more cash in the pocket, and hopefully, people on furlough will be able to go back to where they started. There is potentially, again, quite a bit of pent up demand out there, and that I think could still be seriously underestimated. Now, that could all, if we end up with a third, fourth wave, whatever, oh, there's a big delay with the vaccines. Then clearly, there are multiple things that can still go wrong. But we're used. There's an awful lot of bad news in the prices, and things like airlines are basically being priced like options now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, either they go bust. Mm-hmm. Or they're nationalised and the equity goes to zero, or they're going to quintuple. I mean, but it is that binary. And a lot of investors, understandably, won't want to get involved in that risk-reward scenario, and it's only for a particular type of investor. But it is intriguing that even without getting involved in those binary situations, things like house builders that were trading at 0.6, 0.7 times book value, banks that were trading at 0.6, 0.7 times book value, they were good runners this week. And although banks have got their long-term challenges, at least their valuations are reflecting that. And again, if there's any whiff of a recovery, then you would expect, you know, those stocks to at least have a bit of a run. And I think things like house builders, and there's huge amounts of government support there, again, potentially intriguing. And the ledger sites, people are still worried about will they be around. If there's any sense that they will still be around, then they are potentially very, very cheap stocks. Sort of with Whitbread as well. Mm-hmm. It's got enough cash in its balance sheet to withstand, I think, 18 months of no revenue at all.
Yeah.
So again, you know, you're gonna have to be brave and patient. It'll be lumps and bumps, but it's intriguing that you've seen this turn since July. And I think the more news on vaccines we get, the more creeping confidence we get, I think the more people will lean towards cyclicals. This isn't to say that tech's going to go through the floor necessarily.
No.
But also, if you then get the inflation angle on top, I think just the rate of growth, profit recovery you'll get in value will outstrip anything you can get from Amazon. And one's a heck of a lot cheaper than t'other on sales, book, earnings, whatever it is. So why pay huge multiples for secular growth when you can find much faster cyclical growth in the street for pennies?
Yeah, yeah. And you know, people have to understand the stock market, you know, you look at forward revenue and earnings, it's looking ahead. So, you know, we get more news on vaccines. And AstraZeneca is the big one. Moderna's next, I think. The very same tech as Pfizer, but AstraZeneca, the government's bought 100 million doses of that compared to 40 million of Pfizer and stuff, and it can be distributed. And I think, you know, you've got to look 12 months down the line and say, okay, where are we going to be 12 months down the line? Because right now, are you going to get a discount right now? If you buy right now, I can't see the share prices of these companies being lower in 12 months' time. You know, simple as that.
Not barring some disastrous setback with the vaccines. No, exactly. And I think ultimately, by seeing that there won't be a vaccine, or that we won't get through, that it's betting against human ingenuity, and I don't think that's a good place to be.
Oh no, never do that.
I don't think that's a good place. Mm. Looking at the record of the last millennia, I don't think that's a good place to be in the long run.
Exactly, I know. Marvellous stuff, Russ. Have a nice weekend, fella.
Keep well.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Alien Metals down 3.5% to 1.357. 1.375. At 4, BPC, Bahamas Petroleum, up 0.7% to 3.4. At 3, Galliford Try, up 25% to 102. Of course, Andrew's on the podcast day. At 2, Synergen, up 30% to 131. And biggest rise, sorry, most followed company, which is a big rise as well, up 40% to 4.2 is Remote Monitored Systems, RMS ticker. All right, top 5 most liked RNSs are as follows. At 5, Wishbone Gold, Haverian Telfer Project Acquisition Completed TVR. At 4, Iconic Labs, Placing and Financing Update. At 3, Amma Minerals, Notice of Annual General Meeting. At 2, Nkundesi Energy Project Update, Early Works. And at 1, Omega Diagnostics, their statement there about the UK RTC statement. But the company is down today, 3% to 46.5 pence. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.